Hi, hello, and welcome to the Sex Sells Podcast. This is your host, Eliza, and if you're new here, this is a podcast about sex, relationships, psychology, and society, etc. I hope you're all well. You know, it's weird, as I said that, I was like, I haven't really been talking about sex and relationships much. I shall do that. That will be my goal after today, to get more into that, especially dating. I've been getting lots of messages about this recently. But I've been feeling a pull probably from my work and my client work of really delving into the human psychology and unpacking things and understanding ourselves. It's been so amazing to be working with everyone, my clients one-on-one, and seeing, now that it's been a period of weeks, like really seeing them be able to say, okay, I can see the changes. I can see my barriers. I can see what was setting me back and holding me back. I can heal this. I can move on. Love, love, love it all. Happy day. So yeah, a little update on me. Actually, I don't have any updates, I don't think. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll know my studio flooded again. So I have a house, it has a studio out the back, and it has been the bane of my existence, but it's just a shit fight. So love that for me. Just as I set the studio up as an office and put all every fucking piece of technology I know own in here, it floods, and by some miracle there was like a 2 by 1 meter corner that didn't flood, and it was this where my computers were. So that was a Christmas miracle in April. I did have a little nice moment this weekend. I was in Sydney. And you know, it's weird because I've always like talked a lot of shit about Sydney since I've moved up to the Central Coast, but I had such a nice weekend. I had such a nice time being back down there. It made me a little bit nostalgic, and I was like, I could see myself coming back to Sydney one day. Maybe not. And I went to Four Seasons Hotel, and someone came up to me and said he listens to the podcast, and he was so lovely. So shout out to, I think your name was Campbell. Thanks for that. It was really nice. My mom witnessed it as well, and she was so excited about that. That someone came up to me in public in front of her. She told everyone she knew. So that was nice. Thanks. Okay. So today I wanted to get into talking about taking accountability. I have been seeing this as a really big theme, and sometimes the people I work with, sometimes a lot of the issues within relationships, there is often one person that is not taking accountability. And when I say people I work with, a lot of the time it's not necessarily them not taking accountability, although sometimes, but a lot of the time it's them recognizing their own parents definitely not taking accountability. And I think it's been really interesting to kind of unpack the generational differences as well and why we're like that. There's just been a common theme coming in the last couple of weeks for me about teaching people to take accountability for themselves, and also understanding why others don't take accountability. So we're here. And if you're new here and you're like saying, like wondering about why I keep talking about working with people, I do one-on-one coaching, therapeutic coaching. So you can find out about that on my website, www.elizajoytherapeuticcoaching.com. It's a long one. I know. I'll put it in the show notes. Apologies about that. I regret having such a long name. But I wanted to clarify, it's therapeutic coaching and not just your standard coaching. So I kept the name. Sue me. Okay, so today I'm talking about accountability and why people need to take it, why we don't take it, where it comes from, how it impacts us, a little bit about arguing as well, because I posted a reel about that. I'll get into it soon. I had so many people message me about it. So yeah, that was interesting. All right. So taking accountability essentially is taking responsibility and ownership when we have done something wrong. So if you hurt someone's feelings or you hit someone's car or something like that, taking ownership and owning your issues and expressing that out, verbalizing it to someone else, saying, I'm sorry, I upset you by doing ABC or whatever. A lot of people struggle to take accountability. Some people that have an anxious attachment style, it comes very naturally to them. In fact, instinctively. In fact, they may even take accountability for things that they are not accountable for. I know you got really mad at me and it's probably because I was annoying. That's my fault. Like that's an example of unhealthy accountability that some people take. But aside from people that have tendencies to over justify other people's behaviors and take blame and take accountability when it's not needed, it's usually the opposite and it's extremely common. In fact, this isn't backed by science, I just kind of believe that, or research, when I say science, I mean science and research, etc., and studies. I personally believe that a lot of us in our natural state, aside from excluding the people I just mentioned, will naturally want to deny accountability. For a variety of reasons that we'll get into, but it's not an instinctive approach. It's an emotionally mature approach, yes, but it does not come instinctual and it is something that is learned. So I know that when I was very young in my early dating, I probably didn't take accountability for things, or I would try not to. I would over justify, over explain. Nowadays, I am so ready and willing to take accountability for anything. Like, okay, I can recognize that maybe I said that in a tone that was triggering, or I can recognize that I should have contributed more into this friendship and I was using, you know, being a mom and getting swept up in that life, and maybe it's not an excuse anymore a year and a half on or whatever. So taking accountability is something that I don't find it like uncomfortable anymore, but I know that when I started doing it like a decade ago, I do remember there was resistance to it. I knew I had to do it for the sake of my relationships and my friendships or whatever, but it felt uncomfortable. It felt extremely vulnerable to do this. So why is it that most people, in my opinion, come from or start from a place of not taking accountability as a natural response to conflict that they may have potentially caused? And I think this comes from the way that it was modeled by our parents. So every client I work with, well, almost every client, when I talk about and we unpack the relationships with the parents, which we always do, and the narratives and the way we respond to things often can be taught or learned from our parents. We may not recognize it. And even where we think it's wrong, sometimes we just adapt that approach ourselves. So if you think about, like I asked a client yesterday, in your house when you were growing up, if your parents did something that hurt your feelings or upset you or bothered you or whatever, would they apologize? Would they take accountability? And it was a no. And when I ask my other clients, it's always a no. And this is something I'm really, especially because of my work and work that I've done with children and adults that are processing their childhood, I'm really conscious of this as a mom. Like, I think I've mentioned this before, but like a while back, Adrian was in the kitchen and Remy was like, I think he was just sitting on the ground nearby playing with his trucks quietly. Adrian didn't know Remy was there, and then Adrian tripped over him. It wasn't a big deal. No one cried or anything like that. He just tripped on him. And then Adrian was like, "Oh, Baba, you got to be careful. Don't sit near under daddy's feet or whatever." And I was like, "Hang on, Adrian. Remy was just sitting there playing with his trucks and you walked over, you fell over him, you hurt him." He was just sitting there this whole time. In fact, he was there before you. Like, it's just this is what I mean by like, it is instinctive to not take accountability. And obviously Adrian was not doing that in an abusive or malicious or violent way. He was so gentle about it. Like, "Oh, Baba, be careful where you are." And I was like, no. You got to like correct this. And it's definitely something that where he's really conscious of now, and it hasn't happened again since. But get down on his level and say, "I'm so sorry. Daddy tripped on you. Are you okay? Well, that must have hurt." You know, like, it's so important to do this. And sometimes when I do inner child work with my clients, or we discuss this and we realize and understand and kind of remember the way that our parents never took any accountability, it can be actually an emotional response that a lot of my clients have, feeling sadness for them as a young, themselves as a young person, thinking back to them being, you know, 8 years old or 6 years old, and feeling like they were to blame for things when their parents were making mistakes. And sometimes it's not that they can remember these specific memories about it. Sometimes it's the internalized belief that I am to cause for other people. I am the blame of other people's frustrations or annoyances. I am the blame if things don't go wrong. Or like my client who was discussing, we were chatting yesterday, and she was saying about how she mentioned in two different conversations we had, like one that, you know, her mom often would say, "It's okay, I'm okay," or whatever, and kind of dismiss her own emotions and my client's emotions. And my client does that about herself as well sometimes, like has a tendency to be like, "It's okay," and "I'm okay," whatever, which actually more than one client has this experience. In fact, I have this experience too. And it may not have been malicious from my parents, of course, just to not acknowledge those emotions and feelings that we went through, but it is something that we've internalized. So I said, "Oh, that's interesting that you respond to like your inner turmoil and stress the same way that your mom did and the way that you observed your parents doing. Did you make that parallel?" And she hadn't made that connection before, and it's something that often slips to the wayside. So that's why it becomes this instinctive. I don't know what it is about the generation above us, that of, you know, 50 plus year olds, that really had it from their parenting was so different. The way our grandparents parented was so, so different. So it's extremely common that these parents don't take accountability for things, especially when it comes to their children, or if they've upset their children and things like that. So I find it really interesting and fascinating, and I wish I knew more about it, but I'll be honest, like I don't have the oldest clients I have. I have two clients in their mid 40s. That's the oldest I've got so far. So I haven't worked with people over the age of 50 yet, to really know about that and know about the way that they parent or the way they were parented too. Okay. So why is it, aside from that, the learned behavior, I guess that's the first one, what are the other reasons that we'd struggle to take accountability? And the reason I list these reasons to you is, I should have said this, like I've been doing this for weeks now where I'm like, what are the reasons why? But I didn't explain why I list these reasons, and I'm starting to understand now. It's good to, my clients actually find it helpful when I provide my thought processes behind, like, I'm asking these questions to you because this is what I'm hoping to get to, or this is the realization I'm hoping we get to, or whatever. So I am explaining to you guys the reasons why we struggle to take accountability, because I want you to be mindful and think, which one of these do I connect to? Which one may apply to me or my mom or my partner or whatever? Maybe let's not psychoanalyze everyone in our lives, but focus on ourselves. Which one applies to me? If I am resistant, which most of you are, most of us are, to taking accountability, which one applies? Like, what is the reason why? Because you have to heal it at the cause. You have to understand the cause in order to, and the origin often, in order to move on from it. So I can teach you the skills, but if you understand what it is, so for example, one reason could be you have a fear of consequence, which I'll get into, but I could give you all of the skills on taking accountability, but if we don't recognize that this stems from a fear of consequences, we're not actually healing the issue. I'm just throwing tools in your face, take accountability, and that fear of consequences will come up in other aspects of your life instead. So it needs to be healed at the root, needs to be understood from the root in order to stop the issue from happening. So, okay, fear of consequences. So a lot of individuals will avoid taking accountability because they fear negative consequences such as punishment, judgment, criticism, rejection. So we deny responsibility for our actions, which makes sense. It makes a lot of sense, right? Like it, obviously. So if this is you and you have that fear of consequences, one, I think that I can't diagnose this and I can't provide an action plan for you, because if you have a fear of consequences, that's probably stemmed from something from your childhood, which I can't just speculate every possible reason as to where that comes from, but it likely has come from your childhood. And when we worry about fear and outcomes of consequences, sometimes that where that stems from can be a heavy place, or a sad place for us, or a dark place for us to go back to. So my encouragement is for people that relate to that, to practice self-compassion and understand that taking accountability is a necessary step for growth. So develop coping strategies to manage your fear of consequences. And some of these coping strategies could be positive self-talk. If you're like a really logical, rational thinker, you might need to like write a list of the long-term benefits and focus on that. Listen to my previous podcast about self-regulation. These are all like a lot, some coping skills in there. So yeah, you get it. Okay. The second reason or third, I don't know where we're up to, that people will avoid taking accountability, maybe because you have low self-esteem. And by the way, when I go through this list, it can be more than one. So if you have low self-esteem, you may struggle to acknowledge your mistakes because you perceive them as a reflection of your worth. So subconsciously, you don't want to acknowledge that you have done something hurtful or you have made a mistake, because you will think that it makes you a bad person, an unworthy person. All these negative core beliefs that you have about yourself will come to play. So you would rather have that cognitive dissonance and be in denial and not even think of it, because that is your way of protecting yourself and keeping yourself safe from it. So you subconsciously fear that by admitting fault, you will further diminish your self-esteem. So obviously the strategy to overcome this is working on your self-esteem. And much easier said than done. I can't give you a 10-second spiel on how to work on your self-esteem. I've listened to my podcasts about it previously from a few episodes ago, or work with me on it. Because this self-esteem, I think, is something that really, really underlies all aspects of your life. Okay. Blame shifting. Some people instinctively just have a habit of shifting blame onto others or external circumstances to avoid taking responsibility for their actions. This one, personally, just kills me. It's really, really frustrating. Please recognize, if you are the person that does this, please recognize that you do this. And when I talk to my clients about these things, about recognizing whether or not, like which one they align to the most, sometimes when I make these lists of things, you may not be able to connect which one you are until the next time it happens and you catch yourself being like, oh shit, I just didn't take accountability for something and I just blamed it on, you know, sleeping in too late and my whole day being thrown off or whatever, or missing my gym class, or my mum put me in a bad mood because she did this or whatever. So when I go through this list, if it doesn't connect with you now, just observe the next time that there is a situation to take accountability. Observe what your natural response was. That is building mindfulness, and that is like an absolute key factor to overcoming this. So some people have a habit of shifting blame onto others or external circumstances, meaning we will blame the other person, saying, well, yes, I was yelling and screaming and threatening to throw your clothes out, but it was only because you came home at 2:30 and not 12:30 midnight like you said you would. And you may be listening to this being like, well, what do you do then if that person, you know, that person didn't come home when they said they would? So whose fault is it really? You can take accountability for actions. You don't have to take accountability for a whole situation, but you can take accountability for your own actions. So you could say, Me threatening to throw your clothes out and me yelling and screaming was really inappropriate, and I'm so sorry that I did that. I'm ashamed that I was yelling so much and I was really out of my window of tolerance. I don't think any of you guys would actually use that language, but I was really overwhelmed and I was really frustrated. That's not an excuse. I'm really embarrassed about this and I'm sorry that you experienced that. I can imagine it felt upsetting, whatever, triggering to have me scream in your face. Then once you've taken accountability, you can talk to the issue as a separate conversation. Say, it's really important to me that you fulfill your word to me so that I can build trust with you and feel confident that what you tell me is truthful and accurate, and if there were going to be changes to a plan that you would tell me or update me. So when you didn't come home, when you said you were going to come home, it was upsetting to me. And when I was getting upset, I wasn't getting sad. I was getting angry and angrier the longer you stayed out. Does that make sense? And what I would really love from you going forward is if you could let me know if you're going to be later than usual or stick to your word or whatever it is that you need in order to feel better, express that. So I felt X when X happened. What I really want going forward is X. Oh, should I have used different letters? Whatever. Okay, so if you are with a partner that has a tendency to blame shift, you must have the patience of a saint. It's so frustrating when people use every other circumstance under the book rather than just taking responsibility and admitting fault. And a lot of time managers see this with their colleagues, and they might be pulling up a colleague saying like, hey, look, you know, the work you didn't do was up to enough standard. And they're like, well, this happened and then this happened and I'm really this stressed about it. All those things might be true and accurate, but you also need to take accountability and say, okay, I can see that the work I submitted to you wasn't of a high enough standard and it wasn't submitted in the time frame it should have been submitted. What I will do going forward is learn to manage my stress or learn to cope with the situation, or I will inform you if I need an extension on it. That is how you take accountability whilst also expressing what it is or your reasons if you had all these reasons. Of course, there are sometimes literal reasons like, oh, I'm sorry I'm late to the date. My bus crashed. Like, obviously that makes sense and that's a circumstance where it's out of your control. So you don't have to, you can say, I'm sorry, I'm late to the date, because it's just a polite thing to say. But I don't mean you don't have to ignore every single extenuating circumstance. It's just if you have a pattern or you're with someone that has a pattern of doing this where it's they refuse accountability for anything, it is extremely frustrating to be with, and it is emotionally immature, to be frank. And when I mentioned I work with my clients about this, what I love about being a therapeutic coach is I can challenge my clients openly in a respectful and gentle way, of course, but I can challenge and be like, okay, can I be honest with you? This isn't going to work out for you if you continue this way, and be frank and be really upfront about it. And I love that. And I think my clients like it too. They're like, okay, yeah, shit, yeah. Because my last therapist kind of like, I feel like was hinting at it for 8 months, but never outright said that. Okay. So the reason that we blame shift, if you have a tendency to do this, it's purely a defense mechanism to protect our ego. So it really is just, I don't want to be vulnerable by admitting I was wrong. Oh, I don't want to be putting me in a more submissive position, not in a position of power or changing the dynamics, because it means that you're right and I'm wrong and that hurts my ego too much. This is why I struggle with blame shifting people, as in not my clients, but if I were in a relationship set with someone that blame shifts, I struggle with these type of lack of accountability the most, because it is ego driven. It purely is ego driven. So if you relate to this, first of all, amazing that you can acknowledge that because it would hurt your ego a little bit to be like, shit, yep, that's me. So practice self-reflection and identify your role in these situations. Really start to recognize the impact of your actions on others and listen to people when they're explaining to you, this is what your action has had, the impact of your action has had for me. And for the love of God, do not ever say, no, you're upset because I did this, or you're upset. Don't tell other people how they feel. Listen to what they're communicating to you. And also, sometimes it can also come from, first of all, actually, before I get to that, recognize the impact of your actions on others, but also, and also with that, explore alternative perspectives. And sometimes the blame shifting can also come from a lack of assertiveness skills. So you can't communicate effectively without resorting to blame, which isn't appropriate. It's just not good communication. Okay, another reason people that struggle to take accountability, maybe because they have a lack of emotional regulation. So they don't know how to manage emotions like guilt, shame, or anger. So they don't admit their mistakes. They don't take any accountability because they don't want to. They're like, okay, they don't know this consciously. There's not a conscious thought that will be going through your head. But subconsciously, they're like, right, I know that I'm not going to cope if I feel guilty. This is a big trigger for me. Or if I feel shame. So I'm going to completely deny. And this is why a lot of people deny cheating. Obviously, first primary purpose of that is to maintain their relationship. But secondly, because they don't want to have to deal with the guilt and shame of it once they've admitted it and be like, yep, this was my mistake. This was something that I did and I caused on my own. All right. So if you relate to that one where you know that you have certain emotions trigger you, and this is also something I work with my clients as well, because a lot of clients don't actually know this, like what particular emotions may be triggering to them. And sometimes it's even happiness or success can be triggering. And sometimes it's the guilt or the shame or the anger. So, well, different emotions react differently within us. Understand emotional regulation. Deep breathing, mindfulness, journaling, blah, blah, blah. That's the basic, that's like the most like 0 out of 10 explanation on emotional regulation. If you want a better explanation, if you want like a 7 out of 10 explanation or 6 out of 10, listen to my podcasts from last week. And if you want a 10 out of 10, work with someone on it. Genuinely, not just me, but like work with a therapist on it. It is absolutely the best thing you can do. Okay, next. Cultural or family influences, so certain beliefs or dynamics, discourage accountability and often, again, emphasize external factors, or they want to preserve harmony at the expense of the truth. So I do see this a little bit with people that have ethnic mums where they don't take accountability for things and then they blame all these things, or they blame the culture, or this is the way I was brought up and this is the way it should be, or this is how women should respond to these things, like, don't get mad, I called you a whore, women shouldn't do this, like, that kind of thing, or why I was taught. So it's not an excuse, but it is a reason why people refuse to take accountability. So understanding and helping you navigate your cultural and family expectations, but also empower, the goal is for these people, all those ethnic moms or whatever, empower yourselves to prioritize your personal growth and authenticity. So have that open dialogue about the values and beliefs that may be influencing your behaviors. Understand that things have changed. Be humble. Sit down, be humble. Okay. Finally, the last one on our list before I could go on this for hours, but it'll get boring, is some people just have genuinely a lack of skills and knowledge. So they just don't know how to recognize their mistakes because they have a lack of self-awareness or understanding of social norms. So this one's a tricky one to overcome because there is often like no malicious intent behind it. Well, most of them don't have any malicious intent. It's just something that we do instinctively. But this one is especially hard when they truly struggle to understand certain things. So maybe it's an intellectual, a mild intellectual disability. Maybe it's just low emotional intelligence. There's a lot of reasons why some people actually genuinely just don't know that that's something that they need to do and it needs to be taught to them. And this is why I say for these things and relationship education in particular, a lot of this doesn't come natural and it's something that we need to teach ourselves. So education needs to be taught on accountability. How do you get education? Listen to me. Listen to this podcast. Work with me. Buy some books. See a therapist. There's your list. And understand that the importance of accountability is to have, and taking accountability has an overall positive impact on relationships and personal development. Like, there have been times in my relationship with Adrian, my husband, emotionally intelligent, a trigger for him is feeling like he has upset people. And I might say something in the most gentle way, like beyond gentle, like, oh, babe, would you mind doing blah, blah, blah? It's kind of annoying that it's there or something. Maybe I wouldn't even say it's annoying. Would you just mind doing this, facing this? And his instinctive response with that rejection dysphoria is to feel guilt or anxiety or worry that he's upset me or whatever. We worked through this. We've been working on this for literally years and years. And it's way, 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 way better. But it is sometimes it's that pull, that body psychosomatic pull to surge that anxiety. And then what might happen is someone could go through a spiral, they could go into shutdown, they could come reactive. So like for Adrian, he might become like, let's say he wouldn't become reactive, he might go into like a bit of a shutdown and just he's dealing with guilt. But to someone else that maybe isn't me, or if it were another partner, they might interpret that as, okay, I literally asked the simplest thing or brought up the simplest thing and this person is gone cold shoulder, ignoring me and not even saying anything and blah, blah, blah. And the reality is they're going to shut down and overwhelm. They're out of their window of tolerance, but they don't have the language to express that. And it is that reactive response that we have. And this is why, if you want to know more about window of tolerance, listen again to my previous episode. A lot of that is about that sometimes we have a small window of tolerance and other people have a really high window of tolerance. And certain things can trigger dysregulation. So for Adrian, he has a general high window of tolerance. But if he feels he has upset someone, that's a trigger for him. And it will trigger dysregulation and leaving a window of tolerance, for example. Or a lot of people with ADHD that have rejection dysphoria will experience this sensation as well. So sometimes it's about providing, and my point in saying that and sharing that is that I can understand these things because of my background and my compassion and blah, 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 and knowing very much about this. And actually I was the one that informed him of what rejection sensitivity is and a lot of the things, and providing that psychoeducation about ADHD and how it can impact not just those stock standard things like focus, but also how it can impact your relationships, your processing, certain ways of functioning, etc., as well as many other things like being on the spectrum, having mental health issues, anxiety, depression, attachment issues. All these things can come into play. But if I weren't someone that were educated on that and I just saw his response and being like, okay, a 2-second fix could have just been, sure, babe, I'll move this. Or sorry, babe, didn't realize that was annoying. Yep, I'll fix that, whatever. But seeing the emotional shutdown response can be then annoying to someone else who is on the receiving end of that. And they're like, just take accountability. So anyway, the purpose of this is when people have that lack of skills or knowledge, education needs to be provided on them on the importance of accountability, but also the overall big picture positive impact on relationship, on their interpersonal relationships that it has and their personal development. So sometimes it may be like using self-assessment exercises, working with a therapist or a coach, role-playing scenarios, feedback mechanisms, blah, blah, blah. So I literally at times to children I've worked with, sometimes even Adrian, have been able to provide a step-by-step guide. Like, you know, keep this in your phone if you want. And it seems a bit juvenile, but sometimes that shutdown comes on really, really fast, or that hypo or hyperarousal. Keep this in your phone. So if there's one thing you can focus on, you may not be focused on being able to communicate, open your phone. Just all you got to do is open that page in your notes and have a list of things. Okay, do I need to take accountability for something? Do I need to acknowledge someone's feelings? What are some immediate coping strategies I can do? How can I initiate self-regulation? Do I need time? How can I express? Here is a literal script, word for word, of what I can say in a way that isn't hurtful to someone else, rather than getting up and walking away to a room so that it doesn't look like you're just pissed off. They're understanding that you actually need time to process this, etc. Okay. So I hope that makes sense. A lot of this is driven by our ego, and I talk about our ego a little bit, probably not enough, but it is really, really fundamental that when we refuse to take accountability for things, oftentimes, like when I talked about with that blame shifting, it's to protect our ego, because there is one thing our ego wants to be, and that is right. And they want to be right, or it wants to be right, at the cost of anything. So if you tell yourself a narrative, and this is also kind of how self-fulfilling prophecy works as well. If you tell yourself a narrative, like let's say it's even, people think ego is being cocky. No, not necessarily. It's literally just the desire to be right. So you might not be thinking I'm the best in this world, or I'm the best in this whole coworker. You may be saying to yourself, in fact, I'm the worst member of this team. I'm the slowest person to write reports. And you know what your ego does? Yeah, bro, I can't believe I just said bro. Let's pretend I didn't say that. But it's gonna say, yeah, I'm gonna prove to you, you are the worst member of this team. Let's make that happen. I got you. Anything to make, to prove this right. That's your core belief. I'm gonna do everything I can to lead you to prove that about yourself. So you know what we're gonna do? Is anytime you have a deadline, I'm going to make you feel like you can't reach it. Anytime you have this, I'm going to set you back a few steps, because the narratives we say about ourselves, to others, our egos work to prove that, because it just wants to be right. So it's not going to disprove you. If you say I'm worthless or I'm so unattractive, your ego is going to be like, okay, let me show you every single thing about you that makes you unattractive, because I want to be right about this. And it is a really toxic thing that we get into the habit of doing. But however, you can use your ego to utilize it. Imagine if you believed in your core beliefs or the narratives you told yourself where I'm successful, I'm this. So your ego is like, hell yeah, I'm successful. Let's go subconsciously, and I'm going to subconsciously push you to do all these things. I'm going to make you subconsciously desire this. I have always told myself I'm lucky and opportunities fall into my lap. And when I first started telling myself this, I don't think that I actually believed it. But now my ego, we all have an ego, pushes me to find evidence for that. So when things go wrong and things like that, maybe I'm not like paying so much attention to that. But when things are proving that I'm lucky and opportunities fall in my lap, I'm like, yeah, I knew it. I knew that about myself. So it's what it energy flows where attention goes, basically. So what you're paying attention to is what your subconscious is going to push you to. And if you're paying attention to positive things, you're going to be doing positive things, you're going to be craving positive things, you're going to be focusing on positive things, and the same for the negative. So it's really, really interesting. And that's how self-esteem works as well. Like when people, or especially in particular body image, when people that go from having a negative body image to a positive body image, sometimes it's people that really work hard on it and do this whole overhaul of their life. And for other people, it's literally like, you know, when you see body positivity influences and things like that, they haven't changed their whole body. They haven't done this whole overhaul of their life or changed everything about their physical appearance. And people that can be 10 out of 10 bodies and, like, objectively speaking, and still have poor self-image, it's the narratives they tell themselves about their body that has changed. Like, I have done that for myself, gone from telling myself I'm hideous, I'm ugly, never show your ears, to telling myself, like, you know, I'm beautiful, or maybe more, actually more of like I took a body neutrality approach rather than positivity, where instead of being like, I'm stunning, I would think, who the fuck cares about what your body looks like or what your face looks like? Like, genuinely, who cares? Not me. Like, but anyway, the point is, within a couple months or weeks or whatever, I can't remember, this was so long ago, like over 10 years ago, the way I felt about myself changed drastically, the way I felt about my physical appearance changed drastically, despite not actually changing a single thing about it. It's just the narratives that we tell ourselves. Isn't that interesting? So, moving on. I posted a reel recently on why people love to argue. And this is the one, it kind of like leans into the refusing to take accountability. It kind of comes under that umbrella as well. And why is it that people love to argue? And why are people addicted to it? Because it's totally a thing. And a lot of you responded to this one. It hit home for you. So a lot of people were like, shit, that's me. Or shit, this is my partner. Or shit, this is my mom, or whatever. But the reason why we can be addicted to arguing is that if someone comes up to us and approaches us and we immediately feel threatened, or we immediately feel like they're going to challenge us or something like that, then we get surged with cortisol, a hormone that is like basically the stress hormone. And when that happens, we go into fight mode, flight mode, shutdown mode, or whatever. And sometimes when people go into fight or flight, they instinctively are like, okay, I'm going to fight, as in verbalize and argue, because that is their shutdown response. So it's almost become an instinctive response that they have. And when people perceive that they are winning an argument, and they're like, hell yeah, like I'm dropping some good points here, I'm right with this, or whatever, that releases dopamine in them. Like, that feels good. And that's the feel-good hormone. Adrenaline and dopamine combined together is addictive. And people, and then your body stores that and learns that, hang on, when I was like debating so well back then, that felt so good. And that helped my self-esteem. And that made me feel like really strong and powerful. Your body stores that feeling and then it craves it again. So then you might find actually you're instinctively bringing up conflict and arguments in order to get that feeling again. And some of the other reasons are people start fights because it is the only time that they actually have an opportunity to express their needs and boundaries, and it feels relieving to finally be able to do that. Another reason could be, like I said before, like, was it a reaction? Was it a conscious decision to fight or argue? Or was it a fight response reaction? Are you dopamine deficient or stimulation deficient, which is why you enjoy arguing? So the reason I say that is sometimes this particular phenomena is more common with people with ADHD. And the reason is people with ADHD have naturally lower levels of dopamine. So they engage in dopamine seeking behaviors. So sometimes in an unhealthy way, in a healthy way, it could be exercise, could be socializing, whatever. In an unhealthy way, it could be shopping addictions, sex, gaming, pornography, spending money, or arguing, because those things surge us with dopamine, or binge eating, etc. And we're like, yeah, that's what I need in my life. But they don't recognize that that's what's happening. Okay. some people just like fighting because it fuels their ego's desire to be right, as I mentioned before. And on a kind of more sinister level, some people like arguing because it puts them in a position of power and making other people become submissive or kind of opt out of it can be really empowering to people and think fueling your ego, thinking that's right, you bow down or whatever. Like, I don't know if anyone would actually think that, but you get what I mean, the essence of that. And otherwise, sometimes people just have an unhealthy habit and need to satisfy their wants and needs for challenge or competition. Like, you feel like, oh, this is so good, this feels so good, but none of those other reasons I listed apply, because you just love a challenge and you love debating things. Join a fucking sport. Like, shit, stop fighting people. Just join a sport or join debating teams. Like, I don't know how they have those for adults. Surely they do. I think that's a really good thing to do. And finally, maybe you just want to resolve all your issues by being right, because that's what your ego wants. So it's like, do you want to just be right, or do you actually want to have outcomes that are fair, kind, and satisfactory to everyone? And are you considerate of other people's feelings and emotions? Ask yourself that. So that is why some people love arguing. The other thing I will say about ego, and I'll finish on this probably, is sometimes we go a really long time without understanding the way our ego impacts us and taking accountability. And we may even be in therapy, and even then no one is holding us accountable or teaching us to take accountability, because therapists are often inclined to take your side, validate you. Your working relationship, the relationship you have with your clients, often is 50% of, I guess, making healing happen. So if I piss you off and you're my client, there's a good chance that things I say in the future you might dismiss. So it's really, really important for us to keep that relationship, like having that respect and understanding for one another. So that's why in my current coaching with my clients, it works really well, because they know me through this podcast. They have that like parasocial relationship with me already. They understand the way I work. They understand the way I challenge or whatever, my personality. So it's my behaviors are somewhat predictable. They know that maybe I am a compassionate and nurturing person. I can be humorous and I can be challenging at times, and that's fine. Like, as in, you won't find me challenging, but I may challenge you. And that's to be expected, and they understand that. So that's why it works. But in other scenarios, it may not work, because if you just have this person you've just met say, well, maybe that's your fault, it can be kind of confronting to hear that, especially if you don't know them, you don't have that pre-existing relationship. And I remember seeing this video, it was really interesting, of this woman who has now got, I think she's got diagnosed antisocial personality disorder, which is what the old people used to call, like back in the day, it used to be called like psychopaths or sociopaths. The actual diagnosis is antisocial personality disorder, ASPD. And I think she had that one. Maybe it was something else. I don't know. But basically, she'd been working with a therapist for a really long time, and her therapist was very validating and very much saying like, yes, you did what you could, and yes, you know, you were meeting them with what the tools that you have, and that's okay. And anyway, after a couple of years one time, or I think it was a couple of years, after a long time basically, the client showed her therapist for the first time texts between her and her partner in a fight. So therapists usually never look to see texts and arguments or want to see them or whatever. But in this case, the client was like, read these texts, like my boyfriend's pissed me off so much or whatever. And it was only then when the therapist actually read through all the messages that they were able to recognize, oh, actually you're the problem and not your partner. So this woman had been in therapy for years dealing with her partner being annoying, but really she had very little empathy towards him, was very punishing, was very like punitive, like talking down him or whatever. And the therapist couldn't recognize it because they were only getting framed one part of the thing where like, oh, my boyfriend really upsets me and he bothers me or whatever. So it was only until the therapist saw how this woman is in an actual interaction that she could say, you take zero accountability and you're the problem here. So I think that my point in saying the story is that this is why people can go blind to these things and not recognize these things and go a really long time without seeing that in themselves that, yeah, I am the issue or I don't take accountability. And that's been validated by my therapist. Like my therapist let me go years before realizing, and that's not the therapist's fault either. Anyway, so how do we work on this? The first thing we're going to do, push your ego aside. Easier said than done, I know. It really comes down to mindfulness. When you are in, the next time you're in a conflict or a discussion with someone or they have mentioned being upset about something that you may have done, just take a moment before you respond and think, oh, what's my reaction here? Do I feel anger? Do I feel embarrassment? Do I feel shame? What am I being pushed to say? Am I being pushed to deny it? Like, is that my instinctive response? Do I want to explain it away? And then think about what is actually best for the, like, what is the outcome I want? It's, I want us both to feel okay. I want my partner to feel heard. I want my partner to feel validated or whatever, my colleague, my coworker, I don't know. And how can I go about making that happen? Does me denying it help them in this situation? Or is it just helping me not hurt my own feelings? So just observe yourself. And if you can't, then get someone that can help you or ask someone, ask your friends. This is the thing. Don't ask questions you don't want that you're not ready to hear the answer to. I saw this recently on a post on Reddit, and this has nothing to do with accountability, but this guy had a fiance. They've been together for like 6 years or something. I don't know, a long time. And this is why I love Reddit. I just get all the interesting relationship dynamics and goss that happens. And so he had a long-term fiance, and he also had a friend, a woman friend that was friends with the fiance. So the woman friend and the fiance were in the same friendship circle. They had a girls' night, and often the guy would be asking the friend, oh, what did my fiance say about me? Does she speak about me? And he's always hounding her. So obviously it's coming from like maybe a place of insecurity. Like I don't think it's, I've never heard of like maybe once being like, oh, what did they say about me on boys' night? But to say it every time, like tell me what they said. And he said that his female friend kept denying, kind of being like, I don't really think I should tell you. Like it's kind of like, these are things that are said in confidence. Usually she speaks really highly of you, blah, blah. He kept pushing like, what negative things has she said? Like, what has she said about me? Just tell me if there's been anything. And then the friend told him that the fiance had said at a girl's night with like, you know, a few of her best friends about a fiance that, look, he wasn't like the best sex I've ever had. Like you don't need to marry the best sex you've ever had, but like we have such a beautiful relationship. It's so fulfilling. And like, he's so lovely. We get along so well. And like, we do have good intimacy. It just wasn't the best of the best I've ever experienced. And he called off the wedding because of it. And everyone was like, well, don't ask questions you don't want the answer to. Or what's that saying? Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Like it's a perfect example of that. Like he kept telling his friend, I can handle it. Like that's a pretty like, I don't want to say that's a stock standard conversation, but I wouldn't see that as a negative. I just see that as someone being honest and truthful. And it's maybe not a truth that you'd want to hear about yourself. But it's like she was talking down about him. I don't know. Tell me what your thoughts are on that. I wonder if that hits other people, if that like would be upsetting for other people to hear. Like maybe a part of me would be like, oh, because you want to think that you're the best or hear that you're best. But I wouldn't ever actually want to hear. I would not want to hear my partner say that about me. But I also, if I happen to come across that information, I wouldn't seek that information to begin with, but I happen to come across it. You can't blame them for that to be the truth. Like if you go your whole life thinking, okay, I will only marry someone if I am the best massage masseuse they've ever had, the best sex they've ever had, the best conversation they've ever had, the best this, that, whatever. Like in my personal relationship with Adrian, he's not like a deep and meaningful person. We don't have DMs. Like, you know how sometimes you get in like those conversations with people for hours, which is basically every other relationship I have in my life. Like anytime I see people in my friend circles, all my friendships, all obviously my work as well, so much of our conversations, even just my casual chit chat friends, if we go out for dinner and drinks, are very like deep, intimate conversations, personal conversations, a lot of like unpacking, a lot of like what I talk about on the podcast, things I talk about with my clients. A lot of these things come up, just I'm interested in talking about them and hearing about them. Adrian and I never talk about that stuff. Or sometimes I'll go on like a 40-minute rant with someone I've just met about like aliens, not saying I believe them, but we're just having like, what if there's more out there than us? Where does this come from? What is existentialism? What is religion? What is the, you know what I mean? Like, I like those conversations. Adrian, I don't know if he likes them or not, but we just don't have them. I just never had. But I kind of like that, that I love that I have this beautifully simple husband where we just have these wholesome interactions and he's so supportive of anything. And I get that need of those deep, intrusive conversations with other people. And sometimes I have them with him and it's just me going on a 30-minute tangent about something. And he's like, yeah, interesting. That's it. He doesn't contribute the same way that like my best friends contribute. But that's not a punishment. That's not like a downside. In fact, I like that about him, that like, you know, we don't have to unpack every single thing and thought process. Just listens. He enjoys it. And he's always like, oh, you always have like interesting thoughts or theories. That's as far as it goes. And I think that's nice. So you don't have to be the best at everything in your relationship. Anyway, okay, I'm actually going to leave now. But I shall see you all next week. I will probably be doing a mini app. Maybe it'll come out before this. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll record it today. Who knows? I'll see where the wind takes me. But anyway, hope you're all having a beautiful week. As I said, if you want to work with me, reach out to me, Eliza Joy Therapeutic Coaching on Instagram or www.elizajoytherapeuticcoaching.com. I'll put it in the show notes and inquire with me there. Okay. See you next week.